Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gary Stewart with Conscious Connection. Today my guest is Angwin St. Just, who's a PhD, and she's a systemically oriented social traumatologist who holds her advanced degrees from Western Institute of Social Research and the University of California at Berkeley. She's also a cultural historian, trauma specialist, and somatic educator who specializes in multimodal cross-cultural methods for trauma education and recovery. For over 30 years, she's maintained a co-creative relationship with Peter Levine, the founder of Somatic Experiencing Methods and Working with Trauma. Angwin's traveled widely in North and South America, plus Europe and Russia, offering seminars and training with programs focused on innovative ways of healing individual and social trauma. She's also the author of 4 books, and her most recent book is what we're doing the show about today on Conscious Connection, is Trauma and the Human Condition, Notes from the International Field. So let me get her on the line. This is Gary Stewart introducing Angwin St. Just. Angwin, are you there?
I am. Hi, Gary.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You're my favorite guest. So I just love the topics we cover, and they're so deep and profound in such a troubled world right now that we really need some common sense approach to all the craziness that's going on planet Earth in 2013.
Yes. Well, you know, trauma's not everybody's favorite subject, but it's mine, and it's integral to the human condition, and that's why I called the book Trauma and the Human Condition. I mean, it's part of us. It always has been and always will be. It's part of the human experience.
Absolutely. And it seems tight that when I do my constellation work, it really seems like the life force, for there to be change, it almost seems like violence. We don't question weather like a rainstorm or a tornado that eventually creates a beautiful forest through erosion or torrential, a natural destruction. And yet something beautiful happens after that. And I see the same kind of connection with the human species. We have, if you look at World War II and all the nasty things around Hitler, and then you have 78 million children born in the baby boomer, of which I'm a part of. So you see there's a cause and effect.
Yeah, I mean, if all of that hadn't happened, we wouldn't be here, would we?
Exactly, exactly. And I tell people in my group sometimes that because my father was a good murderer, I ended up receiving life because of his skills on survival and surviving Nazi-occupied Germany and Omaha Beach simultaneously.
That's right.
So I think we often get short-sighted in blaming situations, and it is unfortunate, not that I'm a big war person, I'm still a peace activist, but at the same time, the older I get, I see that there's a longer view of history, that you can see the cycles, and I know you're an expert at that. And I just want to make sure we start talking about your book now. This is very provocative. You have a book, so what is a book, so our listeners know what that is?
A book. Yeah, well, you know, the book is something new for me. The book is a blog that becomes a book. So then you have a blog that becomes a book is a book.
That's
so
great.
This is a new format for me. Years ago, Peter Levine and I used to write a monthly column for our local newspaper, and I really enjoyed doing that, and in July of 2011, the Western Institute for Social Research asked me to contribute a blog to their website on social trauma, because their major focus is social change, and of course social change and social trauma overlap all the time. So I thought, yeah, that's something new, I'll do it. And I realized that, there's so much going on the planet around social change, social trauma. So I realized, as I got into the process, I have enough material here for a book. And I thought, well, the blog can be a book, and it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. In your subtitle, you have notes from the international field. I know you travel quite a bit to different cities in South America and everywhere. With your new book, it begins with Mexico. So what is your interest there in Mexico City?
Well, you know, when I was an undergraduate in art history quite a while ago, I went with my professors who were nuns. I was at Dominican University. And we went to, you know, on a study tour of Mexico. And, of course, you know, we started at the museum, the archaeological museum. And we were supposed to do a project at the end of this experience and so on. And I was looking at what I saw. And it's a marvelous museum, by the way. It's probably my favorite. I was looking at these exhibits from an aesthetic point of view because my major was art history, not archaeology or anthropology. And I looked at these different figures, the body configuration, the body type, the body canon, the features. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, this theory that, you know, was commonly accepted that all these people walked across the Bering Straits and headed south, you know, across North America, didn't make sense. I thought, oh, look at these people. They have very clearly Caucasian features. They have Caucasian features with beards. They have Asian features. They have African features. This theory just doesn't make sense. So now, of course, we know that, of course, it doesn't make sense because it isn't true, that, in fact, the Latin American people came from different parts of the world, and they came by sea. And apparently there were land masses in previous times that aren't there now that made these journeys easier. And at the time I was studying, we hadn't deciphered the Mayan script, the glyphs, yet. So there was a lot of misconceptions that they were these peaceful, you know, idyllic people who lived in harmony. Of course, that's not true. They had city-states in constant war. But anyway, this field has been changing very fast because, of course, now our knowledge of these cultures is progressing exponentially. So every time I go back, I see more. I see another layer. And, you know, Mexico City has many, 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 many layers of social trauma, beginning with the Aztecs and before. And when you go into the museum, you know, their major exhibit is the Aztec sunstone, which you see all over, iconically, people think it's the Mayan calendar, you know, that round, you know, and of course it's not Mayan and it's not a calendar, it's the Aztec sunstone. It's a sacrificial altar, has nothing to do with the Mayans or with a calendar. Anyway, in working with the social trauma in Mexico now, particularly in Mexico City, which of course was where the Aztecas, Mixtec people were, it's a long fractal from then till now about the social problems that were happening with the clash of civilizations, the tribal warfare, and so forth and so on. Well, it's still going on. And if you don't know the history, going all the way back through to pre-Columbian times, it looks like, well, you know, this is just what's happening in an urban setting. But it's very complicated and very interesting. And also, I like the Mexican people. So I'm there every other month or so.
Yeah, they're wonderful people. Being in Los Angeles, I have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
I've been really blinded by all this immigration, and considering that California, Southern Oregon, Nevada was all Mexico, it's fairly illegal, the way I view it.
Yeah, well,
here in
Arizona, you know, we used to be Mexico.
Right, absolutely. And Mexico is even part of Texas. So I see us as the occupiers, and when I tell Mexican people in Los Angeles that, they just get the biggest kick out of it. And I said, we're the illegal. Your property, and then how you would live. But, you know, also, the nasty bloodshed over drugs in Mexico, I really felt it. Human sacrifices that happened in the ancient times. There were some
exactly. You know, if you go to this museum and you look at the exhibits about the tribal warfare and what happened to the captives,
mm-hmm.
And the method of public torture. Public torture was a kind of entertainment, particularly for the Mayans.
Mm-hmm.
And they had specific ways of torturing people, which were really quite diabolical. I mean, all of the pre-Columbian people did this, but they had very specific ways of mutilating and torturing people.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this in the historical exhibits. It's in the wall murals. It's in the sculpture and so
mm-hmm.
forth. And the drug cartels are doing the exact same
mm-hmm.
kinds of mutilation and torture. So either the drug gangs are sneaking over to the museum to take notes on what to do to
mm-hmm.
their enemies, or this is a very long ancestral memory.
Right, absolutely.
That they're acting out right now, which, you know, I think is probably true.
Oh, absolutely, and it is very sad. I don't condone the violence in any way. It's just quite interesting. You know, a bloodthirsty, and if you look at it, if you boil down the cartels, it really boils down to money. When you down, you know, separate the drugs out of it, it's just thirst of money or power. The people that are doing this horrific things to much of the population there.
Well, it's also a little bit more complicated. You know, it's an honor culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that goes on with revenge killing, which, of course, goes back to tribal warfare and pre-Columbian times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting, yes. You wrote about social trauma in other Latin America, and what do all these countries have in common with that regard of social trauma?
Well, you know, what they have in common is that they are really what we know as the New World.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, they speak Spanish. Of course, Brazil, they speak Portuguese. But, you know, they were colonized by Europeans. So the entire Central and South American, those countries all have issues with an indigenous culture that was severely challenged, class of civilizations, severe
mm-hmm.
culture shock. You know, the Europeans brought another language, another religion. They brought another
mm-hmm.
calendar. It was really a major shock. And this is reverberated through the different countries in different ways, but they all have this indigenous clash with the European and the colonial cultures, because, of course, there was also the church bringing their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, these countries are all similar in some ways, but very different. For example, some of the countries still have a significant indigenous population, such as Venezuela or Bolivia, or Paraguay, whereas
mm-hmm.
like Uruguay has no indigenous; it's entirely European because, of course,
mm-hmm.
they killed them all. Argentina
mm-hmm.
got rid of their indigenous people. You know, they brought a few more over from Chile, the Mapuche there, but basically Argentina got rid of their indigenous people in all of the usual violent ways. Where in Chile, their neighbor just across the Andes, Chile still has a significant indigenous population. And there are all kinds of tensions along those lines, I mean, which you would expect. And, you know, each country has a different flavor. For example, Argentina is quite Italian, whereas Chile is more German, so forth and so on. And they all have a recent history of extreme right-wing dictatorships, and
mm-hmm.
in Latin America, they tend to swing between extremes, you know, between the extreme left and then they pendle back to extreme right. So many, many, many layers. And of course, as a historian, I focus most of my attention on, of course, U.S. history and then Europe and Russia. And learning about Latin America was something quite new. I still have a lot to learn. It's very complicated and very challenging. I enjoy it.
So, our nations meddled in Latin America between Allende, Pinochet, and those bloody right-wing revolutions were actually supported by our CIA throughout
history. Oh, and Nixon and Kissinger, and also Ronald Reagan, you know, was a big supporter of the Argentine junta. All that's covered under what's called the Condor Years.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonderful books about the Condor Years and how this Operation Condor spread throughout Latin America, and of course our history with all of that has always been to side with right wing in the interest. Well, basically, the excuse is, you know, fear of communism. So the illusion is, you know, we only have two choices, you know, totalitarianism or communism, and we always go with the right wing because we don't want to have communism, quote, in our backyard, as the politicians have said.
Right.
It was quite a horrific era, and I've done quite a bit of work down there with the aftermath of that disappeared, and all of the horrors that happened around that.
Find the family system alive during these, let's say, catastrophic events that the family system have, especially with the disappeared, really get to grieve fully. I mean, you know they're gone, but that grief is gone.
Well, you know, the whole thing is, of course, complicated and political, and it's not clear exactly what happened to the disappeared because of the secrets and the cover-ups and the, you know, collusion between the politicians and the church. Also, many children of the arrested, the babies, and the children were taken and given to right-wing families to raise. So a whole generation of people grew up not knowing who their real parents were, and there's a movement now in Argentina trying to find, these kids are trying to find out who their real parents are. I mean, some of them don't want to know, and others do. And, you know, this a similar thing happened when the Nazis took the Polish children and raised them in German families. So it's not only in Latin America that that happens.
And how about your excursions to Russia? What have you known about Russia?
Oh, my.
I know. They have a long history. We'll have to do just a separate show on Russia itself because I don't want to get to other nations in the interview in the next 10 minutes or so. So
I wrote a lot about Russia in my first book, Relative Balance in an Unstable World. There's a lot about Russia there. And I was in Russia on and off between 1992 and 2002. And Russia has changed a lot since then. Very rapidly changing society. Fascinating place. I have a special place in my heart for Russia.
That's great. Now, Japan is also a top these days. I mean, there were just two minor earthquakes outside of Fukushima, and TEPCO even admitted that they're releasing radioactive water in the Pacific. You and I and other people died through alternative media. And they've been doing it for the past 29. So now they're coming openly in the press saying that there are dumping. So how do you Japan in that? I mean, also we have Nagasaki and Hiroshima, which we've discussed before. So the between and in America being traumatized by the fallout, literally and figuratively, from World War II, and now catastrophic disaster. The media is just not even addressing.
No. Well, you know, the media is controlled. So, you know, we don't want people to panic is basically their excuse for suppressing the information about that. But again, you know, Japan is a very long fractal. We have this victim-perpetrator dynamic between the U.S. and Japan. Mm-hmm. We're very entangled with them, and we have been for a very long time. You know, we seriously provoked them into attacking us in Pearl Harbor. We knew very well they were coming, and we allowed it to happen. And, you know, we did, after all, unleash this nuclear nightmare in Japan. And then, of course, you know, we encouraged the Japanese people to take on nuclear power for peace. You know, that's an interesting thought. And, you know, the U.S. Navy and Westinghouse funded and supported this nuclear proliferation of the power stations. They had something like 54 nuclear reactors in a country that's the size of California.
Yeah,
in one of the most
it.
Seismically active places on the planet. I mean, this is insane by anybody's standards.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, Gary, this is a major the social trauma. It's a global trauma. It's affecting, contaminating the whole Northern Hemisphere. I mean, and you get into this whole question of, you know, do you really want to know how bad it really is? And a lot of people really would prefer to go back to sleep, and I understand that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not going away for the next, you know, 100,000
years. Probably for millennium, that's for sure. And you also wrote about environmental issues in the book?
Yeah, because, you know, social trauma, environmental trauma are interrelated. I mean, Japan, again, is a perfect example of that, as well as what happened in the environment is still happening in the environment as a result of Chernobyl. And then we have, look what happened and is happening, still going on in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, with the ocean just this week.
Right.
Of a metal
The whole ecosystem is being destroyed. Plus, think of all the people that live around the Gulf. It's a major tourist attraction. It's also, there was a major seafood industry there. And, you know, the disruption from the oil and gas excavations and disasters is catastrophic on so many levels, and there's no end to it. You know, you've probably seen the news. You know, there are more oil wells on fire, and, you know, Halliburton admitted they lied and covered up. I mean, it's just an ongoing nightmare down there.
Yes, yes, and they're even bringing it, there's talk about, just in the L.A. Times yesterday, about putting oil rigs along the California coast at Hermosa Beach way back when. So.
Well, that'll mix in very nicely with the radiation now, won't it? I mean,
exactly.
What a toxic cocktail.
Really. Yes, it's really, that's for sure. And do you have plans for another book here? We want to talk about in our last minute how people can purchase it.
Yeah, I do. I like this book form. It really gives me a lot of options as a writer and a traumatologist. The new book is called Waking to the Sound of Thunder. Trauma and the Human Condition, Volume 2. So that should be out early in January, hopefully. And all my books are on Amazon.
Okay, great. And I'll put the live link there so people can go right to your author page as well.
Yeah, and all but the most recent are in Spanish. The first one is in German as well. And there are Kindle editions for all of them, almost all of them.
Great, fantastic. Great, well, we have a few minutes left here. Is there anything else in the book you'd like? share that we didn't cover, whether either more about the environment or some of the other topics you covered in this book here?
Well, you know, we tend to think compartmentally, like, well, this is an environmental issue, or this is a political issue, or this is a historical issue. But actually, they overlap, and they can't be separated. And I try to make that point over and over again in the blogs, in the book, for people to think a little bit more systemically that what's going on in the Gulf is not only about the environment. It's
right.
Not only about, you know, it's not about only about political corruption. It's not only about, you know, that everything is related to everything else. This is the first principle of ecology. Everything
mm-hmm.
is related to everything else. And, you know, this is why all of my work has a systemic perspective. And this is what I mean by that. And I'm sure you understand that through the way that you do your work.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, and people with, I think, corporations, I just don't think they think long what are the effects, especially with the methane lately. A lot of the fracking wells, there's methane leaking from the fracking
mm-hmm.
wells in Pennsylvania and everywhere. And that methane is 25 times more potent to global warming. And this is, they don't seem to care about releasing that simultaneously while the permafrost is melting in the Arctic. And, I mean, it's going to make CO2 look like recess once methane starts emanating out of the oceans and the Arctic Circle into the atmosphere. And so I really...
Well, you know, these energy corporations have a psychopathic paradigm, which is basically
mm-hmm.
the end justifies the means, and the end is power, control, and profit.
Yeah, it's very sad because I had just watched HBO release the second version, Gaslamp 2,
mm-hmm.
just a couple of years ago, and they did a schematic of the planet and said if we relied on solar and wind, there would be enough energy to power every Western civilization history once we had equipment set up to capture what's already being given to us for free. So if you look at the fate of our planet and see that we're on this path of greed and destruction, when there's an alternate path that is much more holistic, so to speak, it just makes me wonder about our species, really, because we do have a choice, and we make the wrong choice, which is going to lead to more trauma and hardship for our species.
Well, you know, I don't think our species has changed all that much over time. You know, I think if the Romans would have had the nuclear bomb, they would have used it.
Right, exactly.
And if
mm-hmm.
they knew how to frack, they would have done it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it's just bad for learning. I mean, you know, I think, was it Rachel Carson with Silent Spring? She showed the after effect of DDT that people didn't realize, we took the insects out of the chain, then the birds go, and the cascading effect shows up in the environment. So.
Again, people don't think systemically. They think in compartments. And, you know, the universe is not compartmental. Everything is related to everything else. It's like a mobile. Any piece that you move will affect all of the other elements.
Right. Right. No different than family systems.
Well, sure.
Yeah, so how would you like people to connect to you if they want more information? And I'll definitely put up your author page on Amazon on our link here. So
thank you.
We have another minute left. Do you like to be emailed by people, Angwin?
Sure. People can email me. Email address is very simple. It's my first name, angwin@aol.com.
Great. I will put that in our review here with our live link, which will be ready in a few minutes here. And thank you very much. We still have more to cover, that's for sure. So you just keep me posted if you have any afterthoughts here. And this is Gary Stewart on Conscious Connection and a fantastic author and human being, Angwin St. Just. We just spoke about her new book. That's her blog book called Trauma and the Human Condition, Notes from the International Field. Thank you very much, Anguin. It's always a pleasure and wonderful to help get the word out there for our species.
Thank you, Gary.
Oh, always a pleasure. This is Gary Stewart of Conscious Connection. Namaste. Till next time.